Hello, friend. Welcome to Remarkable Results Radio. Carm Capriotto here with episode 533, recorded at Vision 2020. And we've got a debate on the Just Say Yes strategy with Darren Adams and Brent Bowman. You know what? I'm honored to have you listening right now to the Aftermarket's premier podcast, where the voices, ideas, and insights that have and are shaping the future of the aftermarket reside. As you seek new thoughts and ideas, we've been your most important, consistent resource for the last 5 years. Yep, 5 years bringing you critical discussions among peers. Imagine, I created this aftermarket phenom for business acumen that has over 750 episodes in the content library. We've covered it all, yet there are so many new concepts and wisdom yet to be shared. Now, my pledge to you is that we continue to hit the pavement hard and will never disappoint your desire for new and refreshing in-depth talk radio. Hey, remember, always in each episode, find your takeaway as you listen to learn just one thing. Now, here's a taste of this debate on Just Say Yes.
Mr. and Mrs. Customer, would Tuesday or Wednesday would be a good time? Which would you prefer?
I'd like to ask a question first of Brett. What is your perception of the Just Say Yes attitude?
Hey, I know how hard you're working to provide your family, team, and customers a safe and sanitized environment. So continued success to you as we navigate this pandemic. NAPA Expo has been officially rescheduled. Now, the dates are in February 1st through the 4th, 2021. You know, Las Vegas will be painted blue and gold as Team NAPA puts on the fabulous event planned prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. And NAPA wants to thank everyone for understanding the event postponement and sends well wishes to you and your families. Rest assured, Team NAPA is as energized and invested as ever in NAPA Expo, and we sure do look forward to hosting you in February 2021. Hey, don't forget that the books we talk about on the podcast are available on the books page on the website, along with the very powerful keyword search that will get you zeroed in on topics that may help you through one of your pain points. Now, if you contact me, carm@remarkableresults.biz, I'll send you some episodes that lend themselves to your area of interest. Hey, also, the talking points for this episode are at remarkableresults.biz/E533. Hey, now listen to your aftermarket colleagues, Darren Adams from Dry Fork Diesel and Auto in Carthage, Missouri, and Brent Bowman from Highway 7 Service Center in Newell, Iowa. They had a very respectful discussion on the Just Say Yes sales strategy, or as Darren says, it's an attitude. They are both sides of the issue, yet found some common ground on how they grow their businesses. Enjoy. Hey, everybody. We're at Vision 2020 in the studio here at the Overland Park Conference Center. What a fabulous event this is turning out to be. I've got a couple of guests in the studio here. We are going to talk about Just Say Yes, or I Wish I Could, Mr. Customer. And the topic came to me from Brent Bowman from Highway 7 in Newell, Iowa. Brent's been on the show before. Thank you for suggesting this topic. It's an interesting topic. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
And you happen to want to bring Darren Adams with you because we needed to say someone who was on the opposite side of the coin, or at least not necessarily the opposite side, but you've got your own opinions on
absolutely
on the topic. And Darren's from Dry Fork Diesel in Carthage, Missouri.
Yes, sir.
Missouri. Glad you guys are here. Just Say Yes, or I Wish I Could. Brett, start us out.
Yeah, so I guess I've had this thought where I love sales, by the way. I love being on the front counter, love reacting with customers, and just kind of bring some light to this. Beginning of 2019, we had a set of goals. And I was sitting there going like, when we get this really high gross sales dollars that we want to hit, lost a technician. And I'm just going into this new year. I'm just sitting there going, like, how are we going to do this? The only thing that came to our minds in this group setting was lower the car count and sell them more. Help them acquire more. And then that way the technician can spend more time in the vehicle, but less processing time. Does that make sense?
Well, you didn't have the hands to do all the work.
Exactly. But we had a strategy.
Yeah.
And it worked. It worked fantastic. So it all goes back to the 20-80 rule. So that would be the top 20% customers in the business make up 80% of the business, and focus all the time and attention on them. And they come in and man, do they lift. They're heavy lifters. Yeah. And they just accelerate that goal. I found it as a strategy that worked very well. It was very fulfilling. I mean, I love serving these people because it was very reciprocated. It's hard not to have that symbiotic relationship with the customer. Just to me, it gets really hard to serve them. So I come up with, instead of just say yes to that person, might be, I wish I could. I wish I could. I got this top 20% here that I need to focus on because they make 80% of the business.
But if you say, I wish I could, I can do it tomorrow morning. Let me book you at 8. Let me give you the loaner. You know, just leave the car. That's a hell of an option, right?
Yeah.
And would you ever do something like that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I would.
You would never. You'd never walk away from an opportunity to develop or to sign a new customer, but you're telling me it needs to be on your terms.
Right. So I look at the schedule as a board of chess. I play that as the board of chess, and I'm going for checkmate. And so when I do that, and this is dealing with usually these top 20% people, that I need to focus my time and attention on them. I might have to say, I wish I could, because we're too busy dealing with these top 20% of people that are frequenting the business. They're supporting the business very well. And I might have to give an alternate choice. Mr. and Mrs. Customer, would Tuesday or Wednesday would be a good time? Which would you prefer?
I'd like to ask a question first of Brett. What is your perception of the just say yes attitude?
So that's a great question, because here I am. I have a perception, right? My perception might be misguided. My perception is that something comes in the door, no matter what it is, you're just saying yes. I was sitting here going, so are we missing the 7-step sales process? Are we missing qualification? Because if we're missing qualification, then my perception would be right. We're just saying yes, and we're just getting in the door, and it's a free-for-all.
But it doesn't matter if they're a customer that you'd love for long-term. It doesn't matter if it's a customer that fits your avatar. There is no avatar when you're just saying yes. You're just saying, come on in. All the children are welcome here.
I think that's the biggest misconception with the just say yes phrase.
And I'm not surprised.
Yeah. It's, to me, it's more of an attitude and a mindset. Instead of saying, can I say yes? You assume, how can I say yes? How can I say yes to this customer, whether it's today or tomorrow? So I like to think of it as your service advisor on the front counter is like an air filter for the car. You have to have one. But if you have 10, it's going to choke the performance down. So if you have all kinds of filters on your customer, well, they need to be this and this, and they have to like answer a question over the phone, and we have to do this, and before they even get in the door,
blood test.
Yeah, like we're going to CSI screen these people before they come in the door.
DNA.
You're not going to get as much air into the engine per se, or air into your business, and let the business breathe and produce.
So remove a filter or two and see what you can do by how can I say yes? How can I help you? Are you of the point where if you're so backed up for the day, it's 3:00 in the afternoon, you know that you're going to have some problems getting every car out by 5:30 or 6. Is that when you'll say, how can I say yes? Is that the mental attitude? What do you say to the customer?
In a general sense, yes. If I can at all, I try to get them in under 48 hours. Ideally under 24 hours. So it's middle afternoon. If a customer calls in and says, I need oil service, my car is running poorly, whatever the case may be, I want them at my store as quickly as I can. I also like to do all the testing that I can in the morning. So our advisors will typically first offer, absolutely, I can help you with that. Would tomorrow at 8 a.m., can you drop that off so that we can test that car for you at 8 a.m. in the morning,
yeah,
so we can get you answers on your vehicle. So that's our first option. If they push back on that, this is what you have to make a decision as a shop owner. Do you go, well, our ideal process, our proven process is we're going to test in the morning, quote and sell and all of that, hopefully before 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, and you're going to be doing repairs the rest of the day. That's how we like to operate our shop. But how rigid do you stay to that, and how flexible are you to allow a customer that doesn't fit quite in there? And that goes back to this filter analogy. Do you feel like if I'm only going to do if the customer fits through my filter, that's right, a filter?
You know, Brett, he brings up a great point about the filter.
I agree. And I was going to ask him the question, you know, you related to their filter. You got to have one. Now, would you mind sharing me how good does that air filter have to work? What are the duties of the air filter? How functional does that air filter have to be at this point? Because you said you have, say, 10 advisors. Mm-hmm. So is the air filter actually functioning?
I think what he's saying is there could be a filter on the size of job, the type of customer, the time of day. Mm-hmm. All of these things come into play for saying, how can I say yes instead of just say no? And I'm sure we could probably spend 2 or 3 minutes figuring out what all those filters could be.
And they're going to be different
for everybody. So it's not that important, but he's still saying that I can't think of a better word than filter, Darren. I think that's
right. That's what marketing and, you know, customer acquisition, that's what you talk about is the filter by which people come through to get in your business.
If you were going to buy a Facebook ad, you would want to pick that audience.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree with that 100%.
We're not saying, so you get a customer that calls you up and says, hey, I have a used transmission. How much to install it? I'm not saying, absolutely, bring that in. We'll put that in for you. That's not what it's about. It's at that point. So my motto is I use both. Okay. I say yes as much as I possibly can. When I can't, I wish I could is an amazing second base. So when a customer wants us to install used or bring their own parts or that kind of thing, that's what we say. I wish I could. I would love to just do auto repair for free when somebody starts giving me lots of prices. That's ridiculous. That's crazy. Well, I wish we could do it for free, but how are we supposed to do that? Sometimes it's all you're able to do is educate a customer on we're a professional shop and I wish I could, but that's not my ideal. I hate to use the word ideal customer because it's really easy for people to just start sloughing them off. Like, oh, that's not my ideal customer. Just
I'm the customer. And I say, I wish you could too.
Oh, that one's good.
So you're saying you respond with, I wish you could
too.
Put it on, whatever the case is.
You say, I wish I could. And I say, I wish you could too. Now, what do you say?
I'm not the service advisor on the front counter.
there's a back pedal.
Yeah. And Brett you're on the front counter every day, right?
Not every day. I have been out for a couple months, but I'd probably just mirror back to you.
Yeah.
Wish you could too.
Let's talk about pressuring the system.
Okay.
You say, how can I say yes? Tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, you're already booked. You've got 10 cars coming in already, cars, trucks, and you're going to pressure the system. The team usually responds to all that stuff, don't they? The back in the shop?
In my situation, yes. And I always have that wild card of myself, I guess I should say, because I'm a one location at this point, that I am willing, if I need to
jump in there,
I will jump in. If I have told my advisors to say yes to a customer, if the customer wants a repair done, I could probably give you three examples on Tuesday before we left, or Wednesday before we left to come up here. We had a customer that came in for an oil service and we did a show and sell. We brought him out to the vehicle and we showed him that his brakes were really low. I mean, he was going to grind very, very soon. And his transmission fluid was very brown. And he'd asked me about both of those things in particular to check them anyway. We showed him that. It was a waiter. He was sitting there waiting. And he agreed to go ahead and service the transmission. I can't remember if he ended up doing the brakes at the time or not. He was on a time limit. That put us overbooked. There was no way to get it done. I didn't help with that job. But I got some time. We finished up some tickets and I helped. It may not be that I did the actual repair, but I helped relieve someone else, or we pulled a quality control guy off of doing something else that wasn't production that could wait, and we moved it over. So
it's the old, you do what you got to do to
absolutely
make it work. We're small businesses and people love to pitch in and solve the day. Now, if you're good leaders and you're thanking your guys for stepping up and working their butt off, guys and ladies, I always say there's nothing you can't do. There's just nothing. Nature will find a way. You know, how can I say yes to me is the perfect response. You know, they all say, you know, put a mirror near the phone so that when, you know, but when you answer, you'll see if you're smiling. Exactly,
yeah,
right.
You got a smile.
Yeah, yeah. Brett's smiling right here. But you know, my point is if when you smile and say yes, and it's, I hope I can help this person. How can, you know, hopefully I'll be able to handle it. Not saying yes to anything that is thrown at you, but saying yes within reason so that you don't kill yourselves, but yet you're making happy customers and you're growing opportunity.
But it sounds like you're saying yes to the right people.
Absolutely. That's the biggest misconception.
Okay, so that's good, because my conception is, you know, we got someone that's coming in here. We're going through a qualification process, maybe doing a needs analysis, and we're finding out you're probably not the right fit. We're not going to be in a similar yoke here.
Yeah, but when do you have time for figuring out the right fit?
Well,
is it on the phone or is it in person? I mean, are the greatest opportunities that you guys have on the phone or walk-ins?
So the phone script that we use, I mean, it is a qualification process if you really think about it, because you're asking for a name.
Yeah.
You're asking for contact information. You're asking for a phone number. How did you hear about us? Would you mind sharing, symptoms you're experiencing? They sound like just normal questions you could ask maybe like at a doctor's office, but they are qualifying questions. You don't want to give me your name. That's a qualifying question that says you're not coming.
Listen, my money's green. Why the hell do you have to know my name? Just tell me when to come in.
How am I going to build rapport with somebody I don't know their name?
That's a little bit of an extreme situation. Most people are, it's going to be rare that somebody doesn't give you their name right off the bat. But I understand your point. Money is money.
Hey, it's Carm to talk to you about how telematics can benefit your Napa Auto Care Center. Now, thanks to Napa's recent partnership with CarVantage, it's easy for you to connect with your customers and help to eliminate their stress over car care. The CarVantage program lets you message customers directly on their smartphone about any action they need to take, and it's all done automatically based on their car's actual health and mileage. It works like this. You provide customers with a CarVantage sensor that plugs into their vehicle and then connects via Bluetooth to their mobile phone. Then the CarVantage dashboard allows you to set up automated marketing campaigns that target customers based on specific triggers, like when they're approaching their next maintenance interval, for example, or whenever a check engine light is detected. Customers, well, they'll receive a mobile push notification and or email when they meet the criteria you specify. You can encourage them to schedule a service or send a coupon relevant to the problems they're experiencing. Now, to make an appointment at your shop, all the customer has to do is select the service, a time, and a date. CarVantage even sends you a snapshot of the vehicle's health prior to the vehicle's appointment so you can plan for the visit. Customers love CarVantage. It gives them peace of mind and the best experience in the market. Plus, CarVantage is free to them. And for you, a special offer only for Napa Auto Care Centers lets you give CarVantage a try at a very affordable price. And it even includes free sensors. Other plans and enhancements are also available. Even more important, CarVantage helps you increase customer retention and customer spend. Talk to your servicing Napa Auto Parts store to find out more about what CarVantage can do for your business, plus the hundreds of other things the Auto Care program has to offer.
The thing is that you've got to decide, what level of chaos do you allow in your shop? Because if you say yes all the time, you're going to introduce chaos into your systems. And you are going to invite a few customers that are not, quote unquote, ideal their first time in the door. Some of them will convert because they don't know that they've been looking for a more professional place to do their car repair at. And some of them show up because they're frustrated at all of their non-professional places. And when they get there, they realize, I don't like paying professional. I'll go pay three times as much to get it done at three other places. That's happened before. And I've spent 30 minutes on the phone before trying to walk a customer through what we did and how we were solving their problems. And I felt like a loss because I couldn't communicate to them what we were different in.
The biggest thing, right, where your point goes to, how much time did that take?
A lot,
right? Every sales book I've ever read, salesman's time is important.
Did Absolutely. You hear him knocking on the table, everyone?
No, I'm only
very, I love it. Very passionate.
I mean, I don't care who you listen to, what book you read. They will all say the same thing. It's important. Important. We're dealing with prospects, not suspects. Prospects, qualified Absolutely. Prospects. They all say the same thing. I mean, it's a principle, I'd say.
You know, when I look back on all the things that I've done in the industry, and I hang up the phone, if I was coaching, mentoring, selling, leading, and I said, wow, I really invested some pretty heavy time in that. I hope it pays dividends. And you could have stopped yourself at any moment in time and just kind of, if you will, let the rope go, but you didn't, right?
Here's why. If you've got a customer that's in there, especially for both of us, we're in rural communities. We don't have 300,000 people that we're drawing customers from. I'm specifically targeting commercial light-duty diesel pickups. That's the customers that I want to show up, that use their vehicles for a commercial-type application. Like you said, you've got the hold of the rope, and you're trying to reel them into your place, and then you realize this person, they're not going to convert from a price shopper into a testing fee and present the repair and sell this repair to them. You let go of the rope. How do they feel? What does it make them feel? And they may go tell three or four friends. True, people like us do things like this, but some of their friends do. When you have a limited amount of customer base, I went through this. I went through this season where I was a little eager to go, boop, let go and let them. You know what it is when you let go of your kids pulling on the pair of jeans or something, you let go and they fall and hit the floor. That doesn't feel good. This customer feels the same way. So that's what I feel like I have to help manage and negotiate. How do you set them down properly?
A light landing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's almost like Darren's reputation, no matter where it could take him someday, no matter, like you say, the networks are small, 6 degrees of separation. Somebody knows somebody who knows somebody. And no matter if you don't want them to be a customer at all, but you still want it to end on a high note, even though it's never going to go anywhere. I get what he's saying. I mean, it's from the heart. And it's not like you and your family and your team. I mean, you guys are real people, Brett.
Right.
And I can't imagine you disagreeing with that.
Well, I'm not cold as ice here. Just so everybody is perfectly aware, I'm not cold as ice. I deeply care about my clients. Absolutely. I love the Seth Godin quote, people like us do things like this. And I am looking for people like us that
Absolutely.
Do things like this. Yeah. And I will admit, I'm the type of person that if you are a person that does things like us, I will serve you very, very eagerly. I would be very loyal to you. With that said, though, too, very small community. People know about things before they even happen. It's so small, right?
Yeah.
It comes down to tough conversations. Tough, candid conversations. You know, Mr. Customer, I've noticed you've been coming in here quite a bit, and we have some valid safety concerns here. Would you mind sharing with me why we can't help you acquire these things? Safety is important to you, isn't it? And then it's really going to go from there. But you're expressing to that person, hey, I care about you. Would you mind helping me out to help you? Are we failing somewhere?
This is all the conversation to close the deal, to get him in the door.
This would be, we have a customer who's coming in.
Okay.
Say an engine oil service.
Already booked.
Already booked. We've been frequenting for a while.
Okay.
But there's no action off of everything else. You know, we either go somewhere else to get the work done, you know, things like that.
All right. And so they're buying the commodities from you, and you're noticing that they're getting everything else done somewhere else.
Correct.
And so now you're having this conversation. It has nothing to do with how can I say yes. You're just your strategy is to try to get this customer to be a relationship customer.
Correct. So are we going to have a symbiotic relationship here? Or are you just using us for the engine oil service and our great inspection and our great service after that? And then going somewhere else.
Yeah.
So then it gets down to, I wish I could. I wish I could give you this spot.
So you're saying is that customer that comes to you only for the oil change, for whatever reason, you don't have coupons or anything, but they just love coming. Maybe you've accommodated them and they're not committed for long haul. You would have that conversation. You would put a flag in the file so that the next time that they called, you would not have an appointment for them.
It's going to disrupt my schedule. It's going to disrupt my top 20%, or mm-hmm. these people that are saying like, hey, we are culture here. We are committed to Highway 7. We are people like you. Yes, it is going to be, I wish I could. It has to be that way for me.
Got it. Agree with that or not?
A little. So you got a customer that is more or less, in your perception, bogging the shop down. That's a phrase I'm going to use. Because yes. They come in and they don't purchase. And what I've talked about earlier was how do you navigate that ending type relationship, generally customers will leave on their own. Are you sending coupon mailers, oil change mailers out? You are not.
No.
Okay. So generally customers, in my experience, even if we send out a coupon mailer, after two or three times of them coming in and we going out and saying, you know, hey, Mr. Customer, Mrs. Customer, you mind if we show you something on your vehicle? We bring them out there. Your ball joints are still flopping on your diesel pickup, and you're going to have to get them replaced very soon. After three or four times of that, they know what's going to happen when they walk in the door, and they don't want that. And so even if I send them a mailer, they're not going
to
show up.
Yeah, but you're telling them the story that they need to do this. Aren't you going out and saying, listen, we have time today, and or if not, can you bring the car back at 8 in the morning? We'll have it done by noon. I mean, qualify them with an exact time. Are we just brushing these services off to the customer? Hey, don't forget you got to do this. Wait a minute. This is a safety issue. Absolutely. Right now.
So then are you saying you're going through an objection type process at that point? So you're bringing a customer out, say, hey, you need ball joints. Now, were they going to do that repair that day or were they not? Or
what I'm trying to tie in with is you've got this customer that shows up for your oil service.
Right.
And you give them your inspection.
Right.
And they know that they have issues that they need to address on their vehicle. They have safety concerns, maintenance concerns, whatever the case may be. And they keep coming back. Is this correct? They keep
That's
coming
correct.
Back for the oil service. And you don't mind doing the oil service so much other than it takes you away from the customers that do value their cars
exactly.
Repaired properly.
Correct.
Yeah.
But in Darren's mentality, he's going to work that that opportunity. When you see it was done somewhere else and you didn't do it, would that change your perception of the value of this customer?
Here's what I ask myself. When we have a customer that went somewhere else and got something repaired and it comes back to us for whatever it may be, and I notice that something has been performed that we ask them for the sale on. First of all, I want to go back, if I can, listen to that phone call or talk to the advisor about the interaction. Did we do everything right? If we didn't, then there's no wonder they went to someone else. Did we do our thing? Did we do our sales presentation? Did we follow through? All of those things. Maybe it was just they had a tire blowout and they were in a state away.
Yeah.
And they had the money at the time. That's yeah. possible.
Yeah.
But if we messed up, what can we learn from that?
Yeah. You're right about the circumstance and the timing of any kind of issue or deal. Would you ever say to the customer, are you really aware of the safety issue here? And if it's money, we have financing options. I mean, how deep do you guys go?
We do have those options. And we do. I have a service advisor that I would be very comfortable to say is a top 5% in the nation advisor. She is amazing at what she does. She handles objections and rejections like a champ. She mm-hmm. just owns it. So I know with her, and this, I'm going to tie this in with where you're at right now. So I know that if she did the process, I can go back and listen to a little bit of the phone call. I convert maybe 1% of customers that she talked to and did not close a sale on.
And because you follow up on them.
And I will follow up on that. If I happen to know something about it, just passing through, here's something that happened. She talks to me about it, says, hey, such and such customer, this happened. I say, hey, and we'll discuss it, and I may call them back. It's very, very rare, goes back to the processes, that I'm able to actually sell that customer. If she can't sell it, good luck me selling it.
Mm-hmm.
That's really where we're at. So where I'm going with this is you're a good advisor as well, better than a lot, even though you may not want to pat your own back and say I'm the best out there or anything like that. There are some really, really poor advisors in our industry. And I think it's the segment that we've had a lot of push for, man, we got to have great technicians. But if you don't have a front counter that knows what they're doing, you can have a poor group of technicians and a great advisor and kill it in auto repair.
Yeah. Yeah. To relate to that. So as far as the sales process goes, does everybody know who the most important person is in that process? That's the salesperson, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah.
It's
absolutely.
The salesperson.
If you've got a shop that you have subpar service advisors, obviously my first advice is train them or replace them and train them some more. Because if you get a great technician and you have a really poor advisor team that lies to the customers or just doesn't present everything that the technician finds, good luck keeping a great technician. They're going to go somewhere else or be extremely grumpy the whole time they're there. So you have to fix your advisor side of things. Yeah. If you're working with a less than adequate advisor team, there are shops out there that are just trying to make some money and survive.
Yeah.
Most owners, do you know the average age of the repair shop owner?
56 to 57, I believe.
Are most of them extremely happy and loving life?
No.
They're very grumpy.
They want to get out of business. They want $1 million for their business, and they have no idea they're not getting it.
They're worn out. Customers have derailed them and trashed on them for years and decades.
Yeah.
Most of them don't need a tool in their box that says, that's not my customer, that's my customer. Most of them need the exercise, the muscle of, how can I serve this customer? To get back that love for the customer and the process. And sure, they have let too many customers in that, you know, tried to make them do things that they didn't feel they want to put the cheapest thing on, and it's not going to last, and they get grumpy about it.
Yeah.
But most, I feel like there's a lot of struggling shop owners out there that they need that exercise in that mental place where they say, yes, I want to serve that customer. How can I say yes to this customer and get them in the door?
I'm with Brett Bowman and Darren Adams, and we're talking about sales and selling and just say yes, or I wish I could, or how can I say yes. Brett, I have a challenge for you. You're no longer on the counter, okay?
Okay.
And you've hired someone to take your place, and they aren't you. But you've told them, because no one can be you. I mean, we're all unique and different. But you've told them, here's our strategy. Here's the training you're going to go through. And you remember, I wish I could, and we've got this avatar that we're going to pick. But yet that person came to work for you because you're going to put this whole incentive plan together. And, you know, in whatever you measure, they will hopefully perform. If you weren't on the counter, do you think a person may, how can I say yes, more than you say, I wish I could?
The question is, would they say yes more than I wish I could?
Yeah.
Yep.
They probably would. Why? Is it because you weren't managing the process and listening to every phone call? Or would you give them some latitude that you don't give yourself?
I was going to say this, and then Carm, you asked a question, and I don't know if God's trying to humble me right now or what's going on.
Just to let everyone know that Brett's wife, Danielle, is here in the studio with us, and she just did two high fist bumps.
Like, Darren's over here talking about saying, exercise that muscle of how can I serve this person? I'm sitting here like, oh, gosh, like I should just start crying now, or humility's just raining over me. Like, just bolts of lightning here.
This was your topic.
Just so you know, we're perfect at all of this. Just so that's extreme sarcasm.
That's right. Yeah.
I told exactly you. Right. I was like, when I saw that, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I didn't think he picked that or any of them. But that one was like, I don't even know if I should do this.
Brett sent me like four ideas to do this show on, and I picked that one. And anyway, you picked it.
Yeah.
You picked it, and I agreed.
Yeah. So, I would. And it is like that. I'll be completely frank with you right now. Like, I do have a situation that is like that, and I do come up and I'm like, no,
you broke.
I wish I could. Like, the model, it's broken now, you know.
Oh,
and
my.
And we get through it, but I agree. I do have a problem.
But you're a high conformity guy. I mean, ducks in order. Is that how it works? It's got to be your way or the highway. I mean, how much pressure do you put on yourself to live within that strategy?
A lot.
Okay.
And
you're happy how the shop works.
Oh, absolutely.
And you guys are making money and the team is happy.
Absolutely.
And so did you ever stop to think what would happen to the team and, you know, the whole culture of the business if you just pressurized it by how can I say yes?
Great question. So actually our lead technician and all of us were having a discussion about this, and I was sitting there going like, well, I don't know how this is going to go tomorrow. Like, but anyways, he said, he goes, I don't feel I would like it.
Okay.
Really. And he's worked at a different place, at a dealership where it is a lot more pressurized.
Right.
And he does like the way things are working.
All right, so here's the deal. We're all independents. We all have a different way to run. You know, there's probably 10,000 strategies on how to manage and run the counter and philosophy you grab into. This was a very, very healthy discussion. By the way, I want to give you a high five. You closed the shop. You brought your entire team here. Am I right?
Yeah, we did.
And I think you said the first 2 days of this week, you guys just pressurized the system, or was it the first 3 days to do all the work you had to do?
We pressurized as much as we could.
You pressurized the system. You got it done. You closed the shop and you're here.
Yep.
And you know that it'll come back. The investment you made will come back to you in spades.
Absolutely.
How about you, Darren? Did you bring a team, any people with you?
Everyone but our bookkeeper and a parts specialist that decided to stay home.
Is the place closed?
Yes.
Okay.
They're there. They are there today taking care of some stuff, but the business is shut down.
But how in the hell can you guys do that? Because that's what everybody out there who doesn't invest in training and wouldn't think of closing their shop is saying right now.
I don't necessarily see training as investing in a job. I see training as investing in myself and team members as well. Jim Rohn says, he goes, you don't go to work on the job. I mean, you invest in yourself. You go to work harder on yourself than you do your job. That's what he says.
Right.
My training pays dividends tenfold, right. Not only my business, but my life. So absolutely, like, this is a bountiful thing for me, and it leaches down from me too.
It's growing and growing and growing. I'm talking to more and more people that are doing this, but you're still in the rare category, and I give you all kinds of high fives on this. You see the agree?
Yes, I'm not going to say I haven't run the numbers and cringed at the $50,000 to $100,000 that it's costing me overall to bring a group of 10 or 12 people. It's close to 10 people that we brought up here.
Oh, my.
And it's not just transportation, the loss of productivity and the whole funnel effect.
Oh, woe is me, but you're still here.
We're still
and
here.
You'll be here next year. And the fact of the matter is that you guys are going to survive even though you did this.
I don't want to go on a derail here, but I'll get this answered for you. For me, I see the world so far in my very, very limited amount of experience. All the problems associated with people are because of a lack of leadership. Leaders or people in boss positions don't lead, and they don't guide and direct people. Shop owners and leaders are in a position where we are parenting and mentoring people all around us. And if you want to parent and mentor somebody and you don't want to train them, for me, that's not being congruent with how I see the world. Leadership solves so many problems in workplace and home life, everything. And for me, it's not this fuzzy thing of, oh, well, I trained somebody and then they left. Most people here could probably go to my service advisor and offer her more money, and she would likely decline because the chances of her actually going to another location that, not because I'm a strong leader, but that we have such a culture and everyone respects her. And I mean, she's sold over $200,000 a month, several months in a row by herself. She's just not going to have that support group somewhere else. She might, that's like a 1 in 100 chance.
So to the people that are listening that have yet to realize the power of leadership, what best advice can you give them to start building a better culture and be a better leader?
Work on leading yourself the way you wish somebody else would have led you. That's how I mess up so much in I let myself off the hook. I don't hold myself accountable. And I see other people that I'm like, they should have been held accountable for this or that. And they need to be called out on the floor. And sometimes I'm wanting someone else to call me out on the floor because I don't have that internal discipline and I need external people holding me accountable. Mm-hmm. But if you, circle back to this training segment, you know, there's this old phrase, if you train somebody and they leave, you know, like, oh, it's a loss, but what happens if they stay? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the other thing is, if you couple strong leadership with training, where are they going to go? Leadership is that magic wild card that is the fuel of the new business owner today moving forward that retains employees. And why would you, if you have strong leadership, train them? They're not going to go anywhere. The people that you think, oh, well, they could – operate. I have so many people in my company, in our company, I should say, that every one of them could open up a shop down the road from me and compete with me and probably put me out of business.
Why?
They're skilled. They're really good at what they do.
Why would they put you out of business if they weren't a, where were they going to learn to be a good leader?
Because we've sent them through leadership training.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Okay. They're equipped.
But I would rather, if they do leave, they're going to be successful in whatever they do. That means they can be successful in our company as well.
Are you a tough love leader?
Sometimes I feel like I'm a little too easy loving.
Okay.
But yeah.
And then you worry about being too easy, but then still in all, the team responds. So there must be a point in time where they take you as serious.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Guys, I bought a book a couple of weeks ago at an airport, The Gift of Struggle, Life-Changing Lessons About Leading, Bobby Herrera. It's a wonderful, wonderful mini leadership book, and I really recommend it. It'll be up on the books page on my website if anyone wants to read it. I know we've gone to a million different places here, Brett.
It's been fun.
it really has. Any words of wisdom on leadership?
Humility.
Yeah, absolutely.
My pride gets the best of me.
I sense that. I mean, you, how strong you are in the selection of his customers. He's very prideful of to who he wants to do business with.
And that's a good thing.
I know. My point is now we're seeing where it's coming from.
Right. And there is humility in that, too, with how I do that. But, you know, when it goes back to, you know, leadership with your team, just slow down. Like, you know, what have you done? You know, you've
absolutely
messed up many times.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've had to really catch myself, and thank God I'm married to who I'm married to, because she's definitely the counterweight. Sometimes
we all need one.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
But, humility. I always see myself as really, I'm about that level three type leader, really, production. And I need that humility to get me to number four.
Yeah.
Someday, hey, if I can get number five, that's all right too.
That's the legacy right there.
Yeah. Pinnacle.
I've been using the phrase, how can I say yes? So that's more from an empathy based. I want to serve. How can I serve better? Because I can, like Brett, get on this bandwagon of, these customers are annoying me and taking my time. And you can ask my service advisor. It is possible for them to get under my skin, and I do get frustrated at times. I think we all can relate to those situations. But a lot of the misconception when I first was introduced to the concept per se was that I would see somebody that said, well, just say yes. And they were like bringing lawnmowers and bass boats and whatever, my quads and whatever into their shop and working on them. And that's not, just say yes is an attitude and a mental state of, can I serve this customer well? And sometimes you don't know on the first go around. Sometimes so many people are struggling with a civilian version of PTSD. They've been run through the ringer on other places, other poorly run repair shops, and some of them convert, and some of them like the old ways, and that's part of it. But it's really, really hard to grow if you're at your level and you want to stay right there. Like, I'm doing whatever it is, 100,000, 200,000, 50,000 a month, and I'm making this net. I'm happy. I'm comfortable. By all means, you lock your customer base in. You need a few customers to trickle in to replace the ones that move and pass away and that sort of thing. But if you're trying to grow, it's really hard to grow without introducing chaos into your systems and your business. And if you're wanting to go from 100K to 200K a month, that is a huge jump. And it's impossible to do that without the train feeling like it's going to run off the rails and shake apart. You're going to introduce chaos to your systems. And that's, you know, the gift of the struggle. You're going to struggle through some stuff in order to grow, but the struggle is how you grow.
Learn from it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We had no idea before we turned on the mics where this was going to go.
It's the best ones.
trust me, they are. In fact, I have 18 of these scheduled here at Vision, and I think only two of them have an agenda. You're absolutely right. And in fact, if you ever ask me personally, Carm, your favoriteest episodes, this is the ones with no agenda. It's great to have Brett Bowman here from Highway 7, Newell, Iowa, and Darren Adams from Dry Fork Diesel, Carthage, Missouri. Guys, This will be an episode that people will want to listen to. They wanted to hear the sparring that was going on. But I think you both stated your case as well, and I just loved how we ended. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.